Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:34 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is March 6th. Well, I thought we'd kick off with oil because it was down in excess of a dollar in early trading and then reversed and hit a new recovery high. And I think that's pretty strong action. It's almost a mirror of what happened on Friday, even though the moves we saw Friday were larger. So, starting off in Asia this morning, we had China coming out over the weekend with their 5% growth target. So that's the lowest growth target they've had in decades. And it does suggest that this lower peak that we have in the trade impulse. Do apologize, I'm not clicked into my Bloomberg. That's the credit impulse in China. So that has now posted a lower rally high, and it's out of character with the very cyclical moves that we had between about 2011 and just last year. So this looks like a lower high. It looks like we're not going to get up to the 10% year over year growth rate in credit that we had in 2020, 2016, and 2013, and instead it's already peaked. So then when we think about the Chinese market, well, it was steadier in here today, and the CSI 300 is has been pulling back, but it was starting to steady here in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, of course, we have the Party Congress coming up in the next week, so I think drawing any firm conclusions until or at least until we see what comes out of that meeting, I think would be rash. But at least the index is holding here. What is seems or at least seems to be clear is China does not want to collapse in their property market. I don't think there's any country does. But at the same time, they don't want prices surging higher either. And they're more aware than anyone else that growth has been very much dependent on leverage over the last decade. And that cyclicality in the credit impulse is a good way of visualizing that. So it does also suggest that they're going to provide some liquidity, but they're not going to provide the same volume of liquidity that they did in the aftermath of the credit crisis. And I think it is not an exaggeration to say that that quantity of money that China printed between about 2009 and 11 refloated the entire global economy. They're not going to do that again. And I think they are now pouring more money into the defense sector and then pouring money into chip manufacturing. We can definitely also see that the kinds of people that are getting promoted into powerful positions are much more on the hardware side now than the software side. So, all those apps and fintech solutions that thrived in the last decade are pretty much being sidelined in favor of the hardware side, where there's a lot of money pouring into trying to compete with the rest of the world. What I thought was also rather interesting today was as the Party Congress is kicking off in China, Japan and South Korea announced that they are going to come to an amicable agreement on responsibility and atonement for the comfort women issue that's been dividing the two countries. Of course, having a threat of a more belligerent neighbor is something that would push any countries together to settle their differences. And what's interesting here is that the TOPIX index has now crossed the 2000 level. And then the yen has also steadied up a little bit in here. So it's hasn't or the dollar hasn't quite yet pulled back down through the 200-day moving average, but it's, I think, quite likely that we've seen the peak in the dollar and that we're going to be in for quite a bit of ranging subsequently. That it really is about interest rates. And while the Federal Reserve might continue to raise rates for a while longer, then we're a lot closer to the peak than we were a year ago. One of the things that I think is most especially interesting right now is the relative strength of banks or financials. So the financials spider is steadying here in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. Then just the regular banking sector index is also doing reasonably well and firming, at least on Friday, and down a tad in here today from the region of the 200-day moving average as well. We've had a much bigger move from European banks, and that was because they're able to bring back on balance sheet a lot of the reserves they had to set aside for the potential for an economic calamity as a result of the embargo on Russian exports of gas and oil. And now that Europe has pretty much avoided the worst case scenario, then the money that was set aside is coming back on balance sheet and supporting the broader banking sector. Now, I think it's also worth highlighting here that if we look at the OAS spread on high yield debt in Europe, then it has come in from 650 to about 400 basis points. And that's a pretty impressive reversal here. And the more back history we look at, then the more that this looks like a normal reaction in an ongoing bull market. And then let's just contrast that with what we're seeing in the US high yield markets, where there's also been a contraction. And just last week, it was looking like the high yield spread might push back up through that 200-day moving average and the psychological 500 basis point level, but it has turned around. But I think then we also have, I do apologize. I was looking for the high yield, the leveraged loan total return index. I thought I had it. So leveraged loans are, I think, an especially interesting area right now, because they have been absolutely standout in terms of their performance. And when we look at this Credit Suisse index, it's at close to new all-time highs, and really didn't look back all that much in 2022. Rebounded very early and then broke out to new highs. So we had a pop in the upside in terms of high yield spreads, and then the leveraged loan portion of the market, which would by the very name suggest that there's more risk attached, continues to do exceptionally well. I did see an article, excuse me, an interview today with the head of debt capital markets at JP Morgan, where he quoted the statistic that about 80% of the leveraged loan market doesn't have a maturity until about 2026 or further. So he was very clear in stating that we've gone through one of the biggest funding rounds in history, and maturities have been stretched out. So as we look at the very real possibility that there will be a recession, and I think when we think about the pace with which interest rates have gone up, and then on top of that there's a lag between interest rates rising and the ill effects of that being experienced in the economy, then it is quite likely there will be a recession. But it may not be until the second half of this year. And we don't really have to worry too much about stock markets until that yield curve spread turns back upwards and then starts trending higher. That would coincide with the Federal Reserve panicking and cutting rates aggressively because they're more worried about deflation than inflation. But we're not quite there yet. So, but I think the broader message here is that even though there is clear evidence of some stresses in the economy and in the global economy. Because when we think, for example, about what's going on in Pakistan, so it's a frontier market. And if we simply look at the stock market index in local currency terms, it doesn't look like much. Then when we look at it in US dollar terms, well, then we get this huge decline coming down by half since the middle of 2021. There's the possibility that a country like Pakistan or Ghana is going to default. I think there is very clear potential that the Egyptian pound is going to devalue further, and that's very much tied to the fact that inflation is not under control, and that means that interest rates will have to go up even more. Now, that obviously gives us an example here of countries that could run into trouble, and that could necessitate the IMF coming in, and it could amount to some kind of sovereign default and a longer work through. Then we continue to see that big private equity companies like Blackstone or Brookfield are defaulting on their property debt. Over the weekend, we had Blackstone defaulting on a number of buildings in Sweden. So it's just another example, but it seems to be like every week or every few days we get another example of a commercial property development that's been defaulted on. So that does obviously then raise the potential that there will be problems, and that we know where those problems are going to be. That obviously, where the defaults are rising, has to be where we're going to see some stress coming into the wider market. But as long as high yield spreads are not spiking higher, as long as the levered loan market remains reasonably benign, and that is likely to be reasonably benign if maturities for the vast majority of issuers don't come due until after 2026. So there's obviously then the potential that what we could have is a recession that will be either focused in commercial property or will not be as damaging as the recessions that we saw in 2008 or in 2020. And of course, then we have the banking sectors doing well as well, because banks are liquidity providers. And liquidity providers do well in a bull market. So we're still in an environment where there's plenty of jobs available, but more importantly, there are lots of people working and employment is very high. And as long as employment is high, spending will be high. And that is certainly helping to support oil prices too. Now, let's go back and think about oil for a moment. Because we had the CEO of Pioneer talking today about the Permian Basin peaking production at some point in the next 5 or 6 years. And that would be a pretty early peak from a Hubbard's peak way of thinking, that once the peak of production is reached, then sustaining peak production, the cost of that just goes up over time. So we're still in an environment where prices are still quite high and holding around the $80 area, and Saudi Arabia is raising prices to Asia. They see that there's a backwardation in the market and there's a short-term supply deficit, and they intend to profit from it. So we know that oil's an exceptionally volatile instrument, and the times when it spends ranging in a very tight manner don't last. So when it breaks out, it's going to do so in an emphatic fashion. And at the present moment, at least, it does look like when the breakout comes, it's probably going to be on the upside. And then that is likely to be rather beneficial overall to the wider energy sector. But the higher energy prices go, then more likely it is that there will be a recession because high energy prices are a tax on consumption. So the price of gasoline is going to start becoming a political football again. And I know I filled up over the weekend and prices were back well in excess of $3. So it's certainly getting up towards those psychological levels. But we should also then think that if energy prices are going up, then that's going to encourage investors to look at alternatives. So the Solar Edge inverter, it's an inverter company, so every solar panel needs an inverter, is right now in the region of the upper side of a more than 2 year range. And ranges are explosions waiting to happen. If it can muster the wherewithal to push up through that $350 area, well, then we might be in for the next step higher. And of course, there's always going to be the downside potential. If it cannot hold that $200 area, well, then it's going to look like a type 3 top formation. And it has certainly spent a lot of time ranging with a lot of volatility between the troughs and the peak. So we certainly have the conditions for ranging time and size. And I think, though, that it's more likely than not that we're going to have a more, at least a benign environment for the solar sector, simply because high energy prices create an incentive to install, and the wider solar sector has been steadying in here. Then let's think about copper. So China is half the market, and with a 5% growth rate, that's not necessarily particularly beneficial, but prices were in positive territory. And it still has this sequence of ranges one above another, and it's a reasonably consistent trend overall. And then there's going to be a lot of infrastructure development, and the US government is beginning to talk about streamlining the planning process for transmission cables, and that's also going to be copper intensive. So there is certainly the potential that prices are going to continue to do well from here. And the copper miners ETF has rebounded really quite impressively and is now coming back up into the area of the peaks from back in 2021 and 22. I remain very much of the view that there is no way we can reach the utopian ideal of a carbon-free economy without nuclear reactors. And the Globalex uranium ETF continues to firm here in the region of the lower side of this range. Now, if it can push up through 25, it'll break the sequence of lower rally highs and signal the next upward leg in this trend overall. I saw a news story just before I started recording. It's from ABC News in Australia, talking about how the Perth Mint was selling gold bars to China with less than 100% gold in each of the bars, and they've been caught out, and now they're going to have to buy the gold back. So it really does help to highlight that buying physical gold doesn't come with no risk, and one often ends up paying a premium to buy the physical. Now, of course, one then has to pay to hold on to it as well. But at least one then has the gold, and it can't simply be transferred away by the stroke of a pen or the keyboard, or just the punching of a keyboard. Now, the price here has steadied, and it is holding around the $1,800 area. It was in mildly negative territory in here today. And I think that we can give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic, and that's on the upside. And we're probably more likely than not to get a share of ranging between the $1,800 and $2,000 level. But we're coming to the end of this lengthy consolidation. I think a lot of people tend to get frustrated with gold not delivering on the promise. But There is obviously the potential that this range, which has been forming now for about 3 years, has just the beginning of this trend overall. And it doesn't really look like much more than some consolidation in the region of that all-time peak from back in 2011. When I think we think about the wider world, one of the shares that I pay attention to is Lululemon. And it really was one of the best performers between 2017 and 2021. And then it pulled back, and pulled back in a really dynamic manner. Now, Lululemon sells what can only be described as expensive loungewear. Now, some people do work out in that kit, but most people use it for loungewear. And there's no getting around the fact that it is expensive. So the fact that lots of people were more than willing to go out and buy it and pay whatever they were asking between 2018 and 2021 was representative of consumers with a lot of cash to throw around. And then we've seen a rather significant loss of momentum, a big decline overall, but it has continued to hold support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So the price was in negative territory in here today. I would suggest that it's companies like Ralph Lauren, or perhaps more prosaically, excuse me, companies like Lululemon, or more prosaically Ralph Lauren, are probably going to give us an indication of when consumer ability to fund spending begins to roll over. And they are rolling over right now. So Ralph Lauren is right at the upper side of this range that's been forming since 2016. And it's starting to pull back. And I do think that we're likely to see a retrenchment from the consumer. That doesn't mean that companies who don't have to refinance debt are going to be completely immune from losing customers. But a recession is inevitable. And these companies that have done very well from all of that money printing for the last couple of years, they're probably going to feel some of the pinch first. But because we don't have a maturity wall, then the high yield sector isn't going to be where the epicenter of risk is. Now, I do think, though, that the private equity sector, those institutional REITs, and then regular pensions that have or that are sitting on significant loans, or excuse me, sitting on significant losses, are probably where the greatest risk is right now. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.